Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 438. I'm David Elliott. And I've seen every episode of the TV show Cagney and Lacey, and I still can't tell them apart. Which one is Cagney? And which one is Lacey? Today, the 438th issue of the Fantastic Four is Fantastic Four Volume 3, Number 9, from September 1998. A Day in the Life by Chris Claremont and Salvador LaRocca. So it's the 4th of July, the perfect day for a special episode of the Fantastic Forecast. There's a knock at the door at the Fantastic Four's warehouse headquarters on Pier 4, future home of Bohemian Valhalla, one bedrooms, starting at $850,000, opening fall 2015. And Sue answers the door, just casually answering the door, yawning, half asleep, and is that really a good idea? How does she know it's not Dr. Doom at the door, or the wizard, or even worse, some college kid selling magazine subscriptions? I hate having to tell the poor college kids the truth, crush their dreams, but no one buys magazine subscriptions anymore, so they can kiss their dreams of a summer vacation in Europe goodbye. Unless, of course, they have a subscription to Guns and Ammo. God, I love that magazine. So many good articles, and the photography is top-notch, and the centerfolds are enough to make me... Oh, shit. Where was I could talk about Guns and Ammo magazine all day. Why didn't I do a podcast about that? Okay. So, is it too late? No, okay. I've only done 438 of these Fantastic Forecasts. It's like, I'm just getting started. I'm gonna keep going forever. They're never going to cancel the Fantastic Four. Okay, so Sue just showed up and she answered the door. She's like Rebecca Schaefer or something. But lucky for her, it's only a reporter and a camera person. And it's not the same reporter and camera person who were controlled by Crucible earlier, but a reporter named Neil Conan and the camera lady, Manoli Wetherell. Neil says they have an appointment and they're filming a documentary on an average day in the life of the world's premier superfamily. This guy wants to film the everyday life of a family of celebrities? Neil Conan is like... He's like some kind of visionary. Sue doesn't care for the idea, and she turns invisible and slams the door shut. A minute later, the door opens and Johnny Storm lets them in. He introduces them to Ben Grimm, who doesn't look too pleased to have them there. Johnny asks them to show their IDs and asks them if they're carrying any weapons. Manoli, she starts pulling out all kinds of crap. A pistol, a knife, another pistol, some brass knuckles, some nunchucks, some throwing stars... And a Star Wars-style blaster? That's some arsenal you've got there, lady, Johnny says. And Neil says they used to hang out with the X-Men, so they needed the stuff. On the next page, Ben asks Alyssa, "So what's the deal? What brings you here?" And Alyssa replies that with the FF coming back from the parallel dimension, that's news, so her producer sent her on the assignment. So wait a minute. Is Alyssa a reporter too? Manoli and Neil seem to have disappeared. The only people in the room now are Ben, Franklin, and Alyssa. Have I mentioned how much I dislike Salvador LaRocca? I cannot tell what is going on in this scene. Is he supposed to be talking to the reporters or Alyssa? So Ben tells Alyssa that she's welcome, even though she's been there for like weeks now, it seems. And then Ben says, "Alyssa Franklin, we'd say we let these nice folks talk to Reed while we go shopping for brunch." Shopping for brunch? Is that a thing? Shopping for brunch? You don't go shopping for brunch or dinner. You just go to brunch. You go to dinner. And what nice folks is he talking about? LaRocca drew the entire room. There's only three people in the room. Ben, Franklin, and Alyssa. Franklin makes a comment about how his mom seemed mad when the reporters arrived. And Johnny... Well, he's suddenly in the room, and it appears that Sue is invisible in the room, too. And Johnny says he's seen that look on her face lots of times, And then someone hits Johnny in the back of the head and says, "Don't push your luck, mister." I guess it's supposed to be Sue, but LaRocca doesn't make that clear. Johnny replies, "Yes, ma'am." Which is not really something you say to your sister, is it? Unless you're being sarcastic. So next, a little while later, Ben, Alyssa, and Franklin are shopping for brunch in Tribeca, and Claremont gives us a brief history lesson of the neighborhood. And they see this guy cooking sausages, and he looks like Stan Lee. And Franklin is like, "Hey, Uncle Stan! How is he calling him Uncle Stan? Is Stan Lee now a close family friend? And why is he working at a shithole sausage shop? This guy's worth $50 million and he lives in a mansion in Los Angeles. He doesn't cook sausages in Tribeca." But then again, maybe before the successful movies of the 2000s, he didn't have as much money and he had to supplement his income as a sausage vendor. So after eating, the three of them are walking around. Franklin is up on Ben's shoulders and he says he's watching out for monsters. And Alyssa says to Ben that after the FF disappeared into another dimension for a while, you can imagine how paranoid Franklin has become. They pass by Four Freedoms Plaza, and Franklin asks why they can't live there anymore. And Ben mentions how it was severely damaged by the thunderbolts, and the place has been shut down, pending repairs. Meanwhile, a couple of workers down in the building's basement encounter a problem. They hear some noise, they freak out because they know where they are, and then out of the shadows comes Kraven the Hunter, who I thought was dead. I think this might be his son, I'm pretty sure it is. He says he's been hired to clear the underground area of wild animals and tells the workers to leave until he's done. So back at the warehouse, Johnny is showing the TV crew around and he shows them how fast he can dry a wet towel. Neil Conan says, "That's amazing." "No, it's fantastic," Johnny replies. "Actually, it's neither." Next, Johnny says he's certified by the New York Fire Department and he has been learning more about how to fight fires. He asks Sue if she wants her towel back, and Manoli says, "She's invisible. How?" First of all, she's clearly not invisible. LaRocca draws her perfectly clear as day, and Johnny explains that he can tell where his sister is by detecting her thermal radiance. I can tell where she is. When Salvador LaRocca screws up and draws her visible. I like the fact that they try to clear up this mistake by having her lettering appear as an invisible bubble. Next, the doorbell rings and Sue answers the door, and this time, she is drawn as if she's invisible, but the colorist gives her a shadow. Ugh. How could she have a shadow if she's invisible? I don't normally mention the colorist, but this issue was colored by a guy named Liquid, which is an odd name for a colorist. Or anyone for that matter. Ben is at the door, and he says, "Expecting someone, Susie Q?" I guess he can detect thermal radiance too. Also, you would think that they would give Ben a key, and he wouldn't have to ring the doorbell. Next, Neil Conan is asking Reed a question. What's it like to be the leader of the world's premier super team? Premier super team. Sue, for some reason, is still sitting around in her bathrobe, towel on her head, and invisible. Why doesn't she just go get dressed? She has guessed. She's so rude. She makes a snide comment about how Reed forgot to tell her all about this, and he says it slipped his mind. Next, the door opens again, and in comes Kay Sarah and several women assistants. She's come to give Sue a complete makeover. Well, that is conveniently timed. Sue was just getting a makeover, just as a TV crew is filming a documentary about the FF. Next, Johnny heads outside and into a big red English phone booth next to the warehouse. And he goes inside, and it's got a special door in the back that leads into a secret part of the warehouse. And once inside, for some reason he says, "It's me, anyone home?" And immediately he gets attacked by some kind of tough Scottish woman with a big knife. He flames on and says, "I didn't mean you any harm. I'm a friend." So this is some woman who was saved by Johnny in that other dimension last issue because she was being attacked by members of the Captain Britain Corps. They called her a slave, so Johnny smuggled her home to this dimension. He smuggled her. an entire woman, he smuggled her back to this dimension. I just looked at the last issue, by the way, and at no point does any of this happen. And Johnny was very busy the entire time with Roma and that other woman and Great Gatecrasher and Luna. What a mess this issue is. So Johnny has brought her some food. She's a grown-ass woman, and he's keeping her stored away like a stray dog he found. She says that she's not a slave. She's a Highlander. And Johnny starts trying to think of what to do with her. She's not a redhead, so I guess he doesn't want to bang her. So he carries her back to the damaged Four Freedoms Plaza. What a coincidence that some crap is going on in the basement with Kraven the Hunter right at that moment. And then Spider-Man shows up. Yeah, Spider-Man shows up. What a coincidence that some crap is going on in the basement with Kraven the Hunter right at that moment. Spider-Man says to Johnny that a condemned skyscraper seems like a weird place for a first date. Actually, a condemned skyscraper is the perfect place for a first date, if your dates are anything like mine. Johnny introduces himself to the Highlander woman. Her name is Alisandy Stewart. Spidey says he saw Johnny's flames from a distance and he figured he'd drop by and say hi. As Spider-Man and Johnny playfully bicker with one another, Alisandy looks scared about something. They ask her what's wrong. Spider-Man sees the manacles on her wrist and suggests that maybe she was some kind of criminal. As Spider-Man and Johnny debate on what to do about her, a panel in the floor opens up and Alisandy jumps down inside. Johnny says that was the shaft for the freight elevator and they chase after her. Back at the pier, Neil Conan is interviewing Ben on camera when Sue comes into the room and finally she's gotten dressed. And her makeover seems to consist of putting her in a purple sweater and light green pants. It looks like she's ready for the 1980s to come back. She asks where Johnny is, and Ben says he's gone out. And then she goes to check on Reed and Franklin, who is sad because he's worried about monsters coming for his parents. A reasonable fear. After all the crap he's been through in his childhood, and the terrible parenting, it seems like he's finally showing signs of being a completely screwed up, dysfunctional child, which realistically he would be. Back deep underground, under Four Freedoms Plaza, Spider-Man comes across Kraven Jr., who says he's hunting prey, and warns Spider-Man to stay out of his way. And then Alisandy shows up and says that she's standing as the protector of Kraven's so-called prey. She also looks different, calling herself Caledonia. And Johnny will like this. She has red hair now. So Kraven sticks his pet lion, Gulandkin. Can't Chris Claremont come up with any easy names like Bob or Debbie? So Gulandkin leaps toward Alisandy or Caledonia, and Spider-Man reacts by, once again, it's hard to tell, but I think he shoots a web at the lion, and he's holding the lion back. Kraven pulls out a gun loaded with bullets that say NV-11 T-Virus. I think I got the NV-11 T-Virus once from eating undercooked squirrel. So yeah, that's not good. But Johnny swoops in and he melts the darts in the air, and then he chases after Caledonia. But they both get caught up in one of Kraven's nets. And thank God Claremont has Johnny saying, "We're both caught because with LaRocca's terrible art, you wouldn't be able to tell otherwise." And then Caledonia cuts them out of the net, and her, Johnny, and Spidey all rush to attack Kraven, and they hear a loud roar. And I would assume that was Kraven's pet lion, but Kraven says that was the creature he was hired to hunt down. And he runs off down the tunnel with Gulandkin, laughing as he goes. Spider-Man says to Johnny that his spider sense isn't tingling now, so maybe this Caledonia chick is okay. Caledonia finds something on the floor. A leash, maybe. Hard to tell what it is, because, well, you know, LaRocca. She seems happy and asks the boys, "What do we do with it?" And finally, back at the warehouse, Sue is freaking out because her son is afraid of monsters, which really is a problem because monsters are real, and they periodically attack the family. Johnny and Spider-Man are back, and Johnny tells Sue he has something that might help. He opens the door, and we see that it was a leash that Caledonia found, and the leash is attached to a puppy a big puppy with one of those Black Bolt-style tuning forks on his head. I guess this was an inhuman dog, but aren't all dogs inhuman? So Franklin immediately hugs the dog, which licks him back, and Ben tells Johnny that he did a good job. And this is probably why Craven was laughing. Was this dog the thing he was hunting? Either way, this is another case of bad parenting by the Richards family. Instead of just going down to the pound and getting their kid a normal dog, they have some giant-sized freak dog that was found underground and possibly being hunted by Craven the Hunter. Is that a good pet for your child? I don't think so. So that's the end of this issue. Let's move on to a bonus issue. Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 438, part 2. I'm David Elliott, and I've seen every episode of the TV show Simon and Simon, and I still can't tell them apart. Which one is Simon, and which one is Simon? Today, it's the Wizard Special Fantastic Four, half, from 1998. Hidden Hearts by the, not the Karate Kid, Ralph Macchio, and artist Ron Lim. The issue starts on a small island in the Bermuda Triangle. By the way, is that still a thing? When I was a kid, you always heard about the Bermuda Triangle, but not so much anymore. And down a cave under the island, we see the Mole Man, of course, and he's got this big machine called the Trimmer Trigger. And what does the Trimmer Trigger do, you ask? What do you think it does? It triggers trimmers up on the surface of the Earth, which, according to the Mole Man, will destroy anything it's aimed at, and allowing him to become the Caesar of the entire planet. The only Caesar he'll ever be is Caesar Romero, a laughably bad supervillain. I really don't mean that. I kind of like the Mole Man, and for my money, Caesar Romero was 10 times more frightening than Heath Ledger. There was something about that painted-over mustache that always freaked me out and gave me nightmares. So Mole Man orders his minions to activate the machine and target the eastern seaboard of the United States, and let havoc commence. And then he excuses himself to go be alone while he waits for the results. Already I can tell the minions are going to screw this up, aren't they? He goes to another chamber and looks at the statue of a chick, Kala, Queen of the Underworld. He was in love with her, but she ran off with a more handsome tyrannus. Oh, poor Mole Man. He knows he's ugly. He really needs to set his sights a little lower. Find an ugly woman. Are there any ugly women in the Marvel Universe? Volcana? Is she available? So Mole Man starts to remember his childhood, where he was shunned and scorned by the other children for being a misanthrope. Is he remembering his childhood, or mine? And so the teasing continued as he became a teenager, and he couldn't take it anymore. So he fled off on his own, away from civilization, and he ended up on Monster Island. And he was exploring one of the caves when there was a rock slide, and he slid down the tunnel. He was injured, he lost most of his sight, but he developed a radar-like sixth sense. Did he fall into some of the same kind of radiation that Matt Murdock fell into? I'm surprised no writer at Marvel has ever tried to connect the two characters. So he found this subterranean world and the race of Moloids, and he became their ruler. Back at FF headquarters, on the pier, Johnny and Ben are goofing around when Sue comes in and tells them to act like adults, and Reed buzzes in and asks the three of them to report to his lab. So they get there, and Reed explains that he's doing research into PIM particles and what happens to the extra mass when PIM particles are used to shrink something. So he does a couple of tests with Sue and Johnny's help, but he still can't figure anything out. Suddenly, the entire building starts to shake, and Reed suggests they get in the Fantastic Car and they check out the damage to the city. So they go flying over the city in the flying bathtub, looking at the damage caused by the earthquake, helping out people as they need it. And then Reed gets a report from a cop that the Mole Man has landed over at the United Nations, so the FF rush over to see what he's up to. Mole Man is quick to brag about his Tremor Trigger and the damage it can cause, and he says that the nations of the world will have to listen to his ultimatums, whatever they may be. Ben looks like he's ready to do some clobbering, and so Mole Man taps his cane on the ground, and out come a bunch of big monsters for the FF to fight with. I'm guessing the readers would rather see the FF fighting monsters than complicated UN negotiations anyway. So there's a whole truckload of monsters to fight, and now it is clobbering time. So they start to fight, and they fight for a couple of pages until Sue suggests the Pym particle gun. So Reed has Johnny carry him back to the warehouse, and he comes back with the shrinking ray, and he starts shrinking all the giant creatures. Now, I wonder why Reed just doesn't keep the gun and use it whenever a bad guy shows up. Shrink Dr. Doom, shrink Molecule Man, shrink Annihilus, etc. Mole Man looks rather disappointed, and Reed tells Mole Man that the authorities are going to have a nice cozy cell for him. All the little shrunken creatures run over, and they cuddle with Mole Man, who says, "Never! I have almost beaten you all! I was so close!" So the police take Mole Man away, and Reed assures him that the creatures will be returned to Monster Island before they grow back to normal size. And that is the end of the issue. And what I want to know is, whatever happened to the Tremor Trigger? Halfway through the comic, they completely forgot about it. Couldn't Mole Man just say to the police to let him go, or the Moloids will fire the Tremor Trigger again? Ugh, this is not a good comic. But then again, why complain? I think it was free to readers of Wizard Magazine, which did have a high cost, namely, the readers' souls. So if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.
All my friends ask me, what do you see? I say, I really, really like it, it's ugly. I really, really like it, it's ugly.